Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. I suppose it's a sign of the times. The U.S. Secretary of State informs us not to look to a new and better future, but rather to the past. And that past is Western colonial control of the world, particularly the global South. A new colonialism will in turn create a new resistance. Crosstalking the new colonialism, I'm joined by my guest, David Swanson in Charlottesville. He's an author and activist. In Highland Beach, we have Craig Pasajardula. He is co-host of the Convo Couch. And in Prague, we cross to Jason Zahadas. He is an independent journalist and geopolitical analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with David. I've learned to expect a lot of very strange commentary coming out of this administration. But Marco Rubio's comments about the wonderful 500-year age of colonialism is, I must say, took me back a bit, okay? He calls it the age of Columbus. I can guarantee all viewers of this program, the people that were on the short end of the stick of Western colonialism did not call it the age of Columbus here. I'm still kind of dumbstruck by it. David, what was good about imperialism that we should return to it? David.
Well, I obviously disagree.
I know.
I don't think we should return to it. If I disagree, it's only in that we've never left it, and that the empire of bases and economic sanctions and threats and actual coups and election interference has amounted to a variation on empire, not a displacement of empire. And so when we see that they now want to build a giant new military base in Gaza, we understand this is on top of almost 900 other military bases that the U.S. has outside of the U.S. that nobody in the U.S. knows about, but that are themselves often mini apartheid states with different rights for the locals that displaced and slaughtered people. And so if U.S. troops go to the new base in Gaza, if it ever gets built, it'll be a target, it'll be a launch point, but it'll also be more familiar to them and to people who lived in the United States half a century ago than to most of us. But people who want to go live in the gleaming towers of the gentrified Gaza resort, will need to abandon every last shred of human decency if they're going to live with what's there, because it will be in your face colonialism.
Looking back on the good old days, I suppose here, that is a clear affront to, I think, values that all of us, if we're on the left or the right, self-determination, freedom of speech, assembly, those are things I can defend, okay? Their application or what was done in the name of their application should be condemned. And that's why I think I found his words so remarkable, because pretty much across the board, it has been condemned, but it is something that should be resuscitated. And even remarkably more is that he got a standing ovation among Europeans for making that speech, which again is like, was that AI that I saw, Pasta?
I don't know if it was AI, but it was definitely a chosen room. They put those in the room that they knew would applaud to that, and I think it was really nice that they did applaud, because Marco Rubio told them, hey, we'd like to bring you along on this conquest of imperialism moving forward. And in fact, like, as that speech was going on, I kept looking at my watch saying, did we bomb Iran yet? Because to me, it was him setting the table for future wars, not just what happened in the past. Definitely. But I would say this much to you, Peter. I think that this is a different type of imperialism, a different type of colonialism, because it's not so much nation states. What we learned from the Epstein files is that there's a small few who run the world. And those small few who run the world want to control all the resources and want to control the future of this planet. And I think that this is what it's all about.
Well, Jason, all the standing ovation primarily of Europeans is even more remarkable in the sense that Marco Rubio wasn't asking them to relive the last 500 years as partners. No, Europe is not at the table. It's on the menu. And so he wants them to celebrate their vassalhood, which, again, And, you know, you have to kind of scratch your head and something, just like David is right now. It's in, what is going on here? Because this isn't a partnership. This is you know, we're not going to, you know, be attached at the hip and go into the sunset here. This new colonialism, we can call it that, is that now the West is being colonized by the preeminent hegemon, the United States. Jason.
Well, you said it right. Europe is by no means a sovereign continent at all. The legitimacy of their ruling elite is entirely dependent on transatlanticism, which is based in U.S.-centered unipolar hegemony. I mean, Germany alone has thousands of U.S. troops stationed on their territory, and their chancellor is a former BlackRock chairman and regular attendee of the WEF in Bilderberg. And that's why they have unquestioningly defended that dynamic, even when it goes against their very interests, up to a point where they have surrendered their energy security and industrial capacity, whether it be the Nord Stream bombing or the 20-something anti-Russia sanctions. And even on the issue of Greenland, it seemed that Europe acquiesced to Washington. We saw that Trump and Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, agreed to a framework on a Greenland deal just last month at Davos without Denmark's approval. So Europe completely lacks the military industrial power to revive their empires on their own. And we must remember that France needed the United States and NATO to carry out a regime change bombing campaign in Libya in 2011 to take out Gaddafi. So France could reassert neocolonial influence in North Africa. And Hillary Clinton admitted that Sarkozy wanted a greater share of Libya's oil production. So this kind of, so when Marco Rubio says he wants to bring Europe along in this little like adventurism of imperial conquest, that they are, sorry, I'm completely losing.
Yeah, but I think what you're trying to say here is that, you know, David, is that the Americans expect, what they expect of the Europeans is they're just outsourcing different parts of the globe. You have to menace Russia, take care of the North Africa. They play an auxiliary role. So the United States doesn't have to do the heavy lifting everywhere. Is that they will have a complicit accomplice? That's what they want. Okay, and they want those resources devoted there.
Well, yeah, they do. I actually started to agree with Marco Rubio when he started to bash global capitalism and moving factories overseas and so forth. But of course, he wants no alternative to that that points to any way forward. He simply sees a way for certain people to get richer by changing the model of capitalism a little bit. But he also tells Europe, everything you've done right, everything you've succeeded at, everything you've put into infrastructure and environment and education and retirement and healthcare, forget it. You got to take it out and put it into weaponry. You got to look at us and everything we got wrong and mock it and imitate it. This is your assignment. And they salute, they bow down, they kiss the ground. They have rallies to insist that they slaughtered as many people in Afghanistan as the U.S. troops did. Damn it. And we're proud of it. And don't you mock our troops for not being genocidal as your troops. And they claim to be standing up to Trump with U.S. bases coding Europe, with U.S. weapons all over Europe, with the weapon sales skyrocketing. And if some of the militarism goes into NATO and some of it goes outside of NATO and it's Europe-ish without NATO, none of this is standing up to Lockheed Martin. None of this is standing up to Northrop Grumman. None of this is standing up to the model pushed by Marco Rubio. And, you know, the Euro-US white bigotry, xenophobia is just a coding for it that, you know, comes when we have a Republican in the White House, and it'll be gone when we have a Democrat. But underlying will still be the massive, unprecedented increases in military spending, taking the money out of everything good and decent in the world.
You know, Pasta, essentially Trump's plan, if you look at, and I would say illegal use of tariffs, I really hope the Supreme Court will finally do its job and strike that down. But this whole process of tariffs and sanctions, that is a way for to, in very mafia-like terms, squeeze the whole world, including your quote-unquote allies, to pay for it, because the U.S. is essentially broke. And so now they want the world, through these tariffs and sanctions, to pay for it. It's all illusory. The billions and billions of dollars that are going to be flowing into the net, those are all promissory notes. It's just pablum. That's not happening. Okay, but they're through coercion. It's better to join. You will be coerced if you join or you don't join. You can just maybe get an easier sentence if you play along. And I think that's what the European gambit is what Marco Rubio is conveying. Pasta.
Well, I don't know if we're broke anymore, Peter. We just kidnapped Nicolás Maduro, and now we got all that oil in Venezuela. You know, and what's going on in Gaza? And really, to tell you the truth, Gaza has so much to do with everything that's taking place moving forward. The fact that everybody just sat on
Apostle,
the heels.
You could claim this is the Israelization of American foreign policy, kidnapping, piracy. It's very much along those lines, Pasta.
Well, I don't look at Israel as the big brother and America just following along. I look at them as the evil twins who kind of play off each other. You know, every single move that Israel's made or any war we fought for Israel, Western Empire has made a ton of money hand over fist. We talked about the 900 bases that have built, in Lockheed Martin, their stocks have been rising. But I think people have to understand moving forward, when I say it's all about individuals and oligarchs using nation states, it's also about the fourth industrial revolution, right? I think that the West, particularly the European states, are being kind of thinking the way of American mindset, that if they don't go along with this new form of imperialism, it's new minerals out there, right? It used to be about gold, silver, spices, cotton, sugar, whatever the age of colonialism, what it was necessary and those nations were grabbing. Now it's different resources that need to be tapped into, right? Nickel, cobalt, lithium. And if you don't have those minerals, right?
And energy routes, controlling a major energy route. That's very important as well. Keep going.
It is, but I think the lithium and the cobalt are so important to the future, your computers, your phones, whatnot. If the Europeans, they might feel if they don't jump along with the American imperialism, that they might be left behind. But at the end of the day, it's all about track and tracing. It's a global system that's coming to play. So what used to be done with a missile, eventually will be done with just track and trace systems all over the place.
Yes, gentlemen, it will be called the new glorious age of exploitation. But we're going to talk about pushback when we come back. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the new colonialism. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the new colonialism. Jason, let me go back to you in Prague. Okay, we've talked a little bit about what was learned or not learned from the past when it comes to colonialism, and how they and Pasta was quite correct. It's going to be more about resources than anything else, and controlling who can trade with whom. But there's an element that Marco Rubio forgot to mention. There was resistance to colonialism, and there will be resistance to this form of colonialism as well. And it's very different this time around because there is Russia, there is China, there is Iran, and there are BRICS. So it's not going to be a walk in the park. As a matter of fact, it could be a very, very dangerous environment moving forward. Jason.
Well, I'm sure that Rubio knows that it's very clear at this point that Russia and China would not accept a new Western colonialism. This is demonstrated in Russia's case by the SMO in Ukraine, which was a direct response to NATO expansionism and Ukrainian Nazism that besieged the people of the Donbass with the support of the US, IMF, and European Union. We could also look at the current blockade on Cuba, which Trump has admitted is intended to besiege and starve the Cuban people into submission the same way Israel did to the Palestinians during the Gaza genocide. But Moscow has stepped up as Havana's main crude oil supplier. Russia has also played a major role in disrupting France's covert neocolonial influence strategies in West Africa by assisting the military governments in the Sahel region in counterterrorism operations and the development of their golden nuclear industries. China's whole geopolitical and economic strategy has been to provide alternative markets to the countries of the Global South through BRICS and the Belt and Road Initiative based on mutually beneficial trade relations and sovereign economic development. Many of these countries had previously been the largest trade partner of the U.S., whose global doctrine was based on debt traps, wars of destruction, and resource plunder. And China themselves are rapidly exiting the dollar system, selling off U.S. Treasury bonds at a record high since 2008. So ultimately, it doesn't matter whether Rubio believes that Russia and China will accept this or not. The U.S. empire already collapsed in 2008 with the financial crisis, and it's simply on life support now. So like all dying empires, they are acting out violently and declaring war on the rest of the world in the hope that they will reassert dominance and hegemony. However, this will only fuel and accelerate that same decline.
David, your thoughts on that? Because I sympathize very much with Jason has to say that the hegemons, when they're challenged and when they don't have the assets, the industrial capacity, they don't have the even a modicum of trust of even their allies right now, they become much more violent. And it seems to me that this is the war in Ukraine will come to an end eventually. It will be decided on the battlefield. But it doesn't mean that Russia and China and we could possibly even India be the new enemies. So there's a logic to empire. Empires are never overthrown. They almost always collapse internally due to contradictions. But we're not there yet with the American empire. David.
Well, we've also been told the happy news that it was almost gone for several decades now, and it could go for several decades more. And if you're getting bombed by a dying empire, it doesn't help you much that it's dying. And if it ends up in a nuclear apocalypse, you don't get any, you know, what comes next. And I'm glad you call it a war. Wars aren't special. They aren't special operations, even if they're in Ukraine. They're horrors. I think the problem with Russia and China is that what they might accept is spheres of influence. And I think this, at least in the short run, before dreams of taking over every speck of the planet, is what the Trumpies hope for, is spheres of influence, which is not universal standards of international law. In fact, its agreement with Marco Rubio on trashing international law and equal rights and accountability for every single person on Earth, including the Epstein file crew and so forth. No, it's allowing the Monroe Doctrine here and Russia here and China here and so forth. And it's a recipe for disaster. It's not the disaster Marco Rubio is afraid of humanitarianism and education and open borders. I wish, you know, nobody ever tried for open borders. Would have been a wonderful idea. Spain's basic human decency to immigrants is a model for the rest of these clowns. But when Marco Rubio's counter argument is human nature, by which he means the most evil thing anyone in Washington, D.C. does is the nature of the species. This is not an argument at all. You look at the people in the streets of Munich protesting this idiot. You look at the people across Europe. Not a single government in Europe is representing its people on foreign policy, on acceptance of U.S. bases, on peace, on international law. There are protests outside U.S. military bases across Europe. Go to worldbeyondwar.org and look at them and join in them. This is just a recipe for disaster. Munich, the word Munich in the U.S. basically means a bad deal that leads to a world war. And this is what Marco Rubio was proposing. And if it leads to a world war, we don't get any new arrangement of mini empires. We don't get any post-imperial paradise. You know, we get apocalypse.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the question of spheres of influence, because Pasta, I think that they, again, you know, we had Marco Rubio coming out of the gate, you know, talking about multipolarity and all that. I think you remember that. It was like in February of last year, and it was like, you know, I did a program on it. I said, what's going on here? We haven't heard someone like, you know, a war hawk, you know, a neocon talk that way. I guess it was just pablum. But, you know, maybe as a compromise to put a break on the Trump administration's policies would be spheres of influence. But I don't even think they would recognize that. Oh, we have our sphere of influence, but you don't. What is mine is mine. What is yours is negotiable. I think that's their approach, Pasta.
Yeah, and I think Trump kind of represents exactly what American foreign policy looks like, right? It's just, it's kind of refreshing in a way that it's so overt. And it's not covert. Yeah. I mean, you hear like, you know, AOC was just talking the other day because I think she's number two on the betting list to be the president, the Democratic representative president. And she tries to present this kind of foreign policy as empire is bad, you know, imperialism is bad, but yet we're going to go along with it. So, you know,
imperialism is bad. Empires are bad, but not ours.
You know, we're going to still do it, you know, anyways. And I was just, you know, I mean, this is America in a nutshell. I was just in Minnesota covering the anti-ICE protest. And once again, I don't think it's, you know, it would be funny if it wasn't so serious. But at least the Trump administration is out in front. ICE is doing what they're doing. They're not hiding anything. They're going into houses without judicial warrants and whatnot. So at least we get to see the empire on its face, what it looks like, as opposed to what it looked like before. You know, but I think Pasta, that Hillary Clinton.
But you're absolutely right, because that's what the United States does to the world. And now this new imperial thinking is come home. You don't need a warrant to go into someone's house. You can shoot someone in the back 8 times with impunity, apparently. Okay. That's American foreign policy abroad. Peter. It's come home.
Yeah.
Well, the big problem is that we have 100 times the chicken
will eventually come home the roost.
Go ahead, David. Go ahead.
Yeah. The big problem, to the shame of those of us who live in the United States, is that we have 100 times the protests and resistance and agitation about the paramilitary in U.S. cities killing a very small number of people than what we have to the U.S. military abroad killing hundreds of times that number of people. And so the appropriate level of activism is inverted. And of course, it's because of what's close to people. You know, people protest what's closer to them, and we've got to work on that. But, you know, it's a work in progress, and sometimes people get it right.
You know, Jason,
again,
I agree with
there's an overt killing of people, Peter and David. I just want to point that out. Yeah, we don't bomb people here at home as much. We do shoot them here and there, the police force, but we drug them up. People die from overdose. People die. There's like almost 1 million homeless people right now. So there's other ways to kill people in which the United States is doing. And I think they want to do that abroad the way they've done that at home.
Well, I think, you know, plus their most important approach, weapon, is to keep people ignorant. And that's all by design. Okay. That's all by design. And living outside that bubble, it is so apparent. Okay. Jason, both David and Pasta have mentioned something, and it's kind of cold comfort, but at least we don't hear, we're bringing democracy to these people and we want to educate them. I mean, you know, this whole rules-based order mantra was so exhausting for the 4 years before, but it doesn't make, this new approach doesn't make me feel any better. It's different approaches to the same place, Jason.
Yes, exactly. You're absolutely right. Trump and the MAGA Republicans have adopted, I guess what you could say was Teddy Roosevelt's ideal of unapologetic empire, while the Democrats and non-MAGA Republicans like the Bush and Cheney families embrace Woodrow Wilson's kind of liberal internationalist view of empire that uses principles of human rights and international law to set fire to those exact same principles. And both scenarios, the bombs that the Pentagon drops on the countries of the global South come with the exact same combination of IMF loans, debt slavery, and the privatization of natural resources by foreign corporations. That is exactly what Washington has planned for Venezuela, Iran, and Cuba. And another point I will add is that it's well established by history that a country that is ruthlessly imperial abroad cannot be democratic at home. That is what we witnessed in the U.S. with the Red Scares, the Assange and Snowden cases, MKUltra, and the weaponization of the Espionage Act, more broadly speaking. The Bill of Rights just seemingly does not apply anymore. And that is a direct outcome of a foreign policy that uses American tax dollars to wage wars of destruction for the purposes of enriching the banks, multinationals, and arms manufacturers.
Yeah, all you have to do is just do maybe a 30-minute review of those 3 million documents that have been released. And that's exactly what it seems to be all about. It's about the vested and kind of a very perverted interest of a small group of people. I hope people draw the right I hope that people will start drawing the right conclusion from that. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Charlottesville, Highland Beach, and in Prague. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.